Balance Grove, Emerald Grove, Cedar Grove, Union Grove, Soldiers Grove, Hales Corners, Lades Corners, Abel's Corners, Newber Corners, Pipersville, Pittsville, Deansville, Deansville, Reeseville, Janesville, Platteville, Orphanville, Fortville, Blanchville, Plainville, Plain, Plainfield, Nutterville, Butternut.
I've been over there, hey, smell that dairy air, hey.
I'm Glenn Moberg in for Joy Cardine this morning, and it's 6 o'clock on a Friday morning, and on this particular Friday, it's time to tell Glenn where to go. If you live in southern Wisconsin, you don't have to go far to find effigy mounds, earthen structures that served a religious purpose for the people who lived here before the arrival of white settlers. And as we will find out today, there are many effigy mounds on the southern Wisconsin landscape, in our fields and prairies, and if you live in the Madison area, right on the grounds of our local landmarks. Joining us today in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio, Rob Noury. He's a landscape historian, the Preservation of Sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, and volunteer caretaker of Man Mound Park. That's a unique site just north of Baraboo. So, okay, Rob, tell us about Man Mound Park and why it's so special.
Well, good morning, Glenn. Man Mound is the only human-shaped effigy mound in existence. Effigy mounds
in Wisconsin or anywhere in the world?
Really anywhere in the world, because the only place we find effigy mounds is right here in Wisconsin, a little bit into Minnesota, a little bit into Iowa, a little bit into Illinois. There were at one time perhaps as many as a dozen man-shaped mounds, but this is the only one that remains. And of all the ones that were ever recorded, it's the one that has the greatest detail. It looks the most like a human figure.
And I was reading on the website that it's huge. It's 214 feet long by 48 feet wide.
Yep.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the lower portion, the lower quarter of the mound was amputated, shall we say, by putting a road in.
Poor man mound. Yeah, he lost his legs.
He did, unfortunately. But one of the things I've been doing for the
so it's clear to the people who are listening, there's a website where you can get pictures.
Yes, there is.
Of Man Mound, and it's a huge figure. And then right where the top part of his legs are supposed to go, there's a road running through them,
which is called Man Mound Road. It's amazing how we name roads for things that we destroy. Exactly. Yeah. So it was about 1860. The road was put in. It runs right through the middle of a section of land. It's where roads were put, and unfortunately, the values of the time were not to shift that road location, but rather to put it right through the legs of this effigy mound.
Now, the picture I saw, somebody painted white lines where those legs used to be so that you could still see the figure.
Yeah, I'm that somebody. 7 years ago, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the preservation of this mound. It's, in fact, the very first effigy mound that was ever preserved specifically for being an effigy mound. In 1907 and 8, three organizations got together and raised a grand total of about $300 to purchase the acre and a quarter of land that includes the man mound, which otherwise was about to be plowed up to add to a cornfield.
Was there a big ceremony for the dedication?
There was. As a matter of fact, we had about 300. Well, I wasn't there. But in 1908, there were about 350 people who showed up. These were members of the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, the Sauk County Historical Society, and the Wisconsin Federation of Women's Clubs, all of which had pitched in to try to do this preservation.
Any Native American groups involved in that dedication?
Just barely. There was a wampum belt that was presented. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to find that belt. It also was probably not culturally appropriate for the tribes of the area. At that point, these were considered more curiosities rather than part of the continuing presence of the Native peoples.
And our attitudes toward Native Americans at the time and their cultural heritage left a lot to be desired.
They did, unfortunately. And they have improved and I hopefully are continuing to improve. But it's still a challenge. And it's still a challenge to make sure the Native peoples are always included in events that we do at the Man Mound and at other effigy mound sites as well.
Now, this is just 4 miles north of Baraboo, and I'd never heard of it before.
Which is unfortunate. It is actually it's east of Baraboo, about 4 miles, and It is now managed as a county park, has been for about 50 years, and it's just a spectacular site. But it's amazing how many people visit. I live just down the road, about a quarter mile away. It's amazing how many people visit and, like you, say, I've never heard of this thing, and are just in awe of this spectacular ancient work of art.
Well, what got you involved as caretaker?
Again, it was going back 7 years ago when we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the preservation. And I had been aware of effigy mounds, was involved in some work on effigy mounds. In this case, the site was being fairly well taken care of by the county park system. But there were some things we could improve, but like lots of park systems, they really didn't have the personnel nor the knowledge to do so. And so I stepped up to try to take a little bit better care of the site. And
how much work is that?
I probably put in a few hundred hours a year. Primarily what we're doing is, up until 7 years ago, the grass on the surface of the mound was mowed like everything else at the park.
Mm-hmm.
So every 10 days or so, during the growing season, a power mower would run over the top of the surface of this mound, which, you know, as well, they did a fine job of doing that. It's not appropriate for lots of reasons.
You mentioned that this is the only man mound that's in existence. There were maybe a dozen of them, but that's a small portion of the 4,000 of these structures that used to exist. Why is that the case? Why are our figures in the shape of men so much less common in effigy mounds than figures of animals and birds?
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that, and we really don't. And part of it gets into trying to understand why mounds are made in the various shapes that they're made in, and we really don't know. What is unique about the man mound, if you look at an image of it, is that it has all the form of a human with one addition, and that is it has projections that come out of the head.
They look like horns.
They look like horns, exactly, or ears or some such thing. And we really don't know exactly why that is.
Do we know why they built effigy mounds? And I guess the first way to answer that question is who built them and when?
The when is easier than the who. Well, I guess both of them can be covered. The when is roughly between about the year 700 and the year 1200. So,
and this is only in southern Wisconsin and
a little bit
adjacent areas.
Yep. Yeah, the only place we find these are there are a few kind of unique outliers, which are similar but probably not directly related to effigy mounds that are found in this area. So they were built over that roughly 500 year time period. And who built them? This is a fascinating question, one that's been debated for a long, long time. But the kind of general answer is they were built by the ancestor or the ancestors of the Native Americans who were here at the time that European settlers showed up.
Are these burial mounds? Are there?
They are burials.
Okay.
And are legally protected as such.
And do you find other artifacts, pottery and you know, maybe jewelry and other things?
Very little.
Really?
There's very little in terms of what is referred to as grave goods. What is found is often more incidental to the burial rather than anything that was specifically placed there for ceremonial purposes.
And this is the only one. If people want to go to Man-Made or Man Mound Park, where can they find it?
You head eastwards out of Baraboo on Highway 33. You get to County T. You make a left. You go up to Man Mound Road, drive about 3 miles, and it's kind of a giveaway because there are these two white stripes across the road, which is where I have painted the location of the legs.
And this is certainly not the only place where you can find effigy mounds in southern Wisconsin. And you brought a big list with you, and we're going to try to get to as many of them as we possibly can today. We are talking to Rob Noury. He's a landscape historian, the Preservation of Sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, and the volunteer caretaker of Man Mound Park. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine this morning. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear about someone who is near and dear to our guest, Rob Noury, Increase A. Lapham, a 19th century explorer who was one of the first to write about the effigy mounds that covered the southern Wisconsin landscape. We also want to hear from you. Do you have a favorite effigy mound that you like to visit? Do you have a story to share about an effigy mound or your experience visiting one? Or do you have a question for Rob Noury? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org or put a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'll read it on the air. Or you can Twitter us at the Joy Cardine Show. But first, this news.
Franklin, the other Franklin, New Franklin, Richmond, New Richmond, Ridgewood, Woodruff, Woodford, Pleasantville, Pleasant Prairie, Sun Prairie, Stein Prairie, Prairie Sheen, Prairie Sack, Black Flambeau, Burnett, Hoffman, Ben, Auburndale, New Auburn, Berlin, New Berlin, London, New London, Rome, the other Rome, Franklin, the other Franklin, New Franklin, Richmond.
We're back on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy this morning. It's Friday, and in this case, it's time to tell Glenn where to go. And you don't have to go very far if you live in southern Wisconsin to find an effigy mound, earthen structures made by pre-Columbian Native Americans in the shapes of animals, birds, and, in a few cases, humans. Our guest today, Rob Noury, landscape historian and Preservation of Sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society. Rob, from what I've read, the early white settlers did not believe that the woodland Indians or their ancestors were capable of creating these structures, so they tried to find some other explanations for them.
Yeah, it's what's known as the mound builder myth, the idea of who actually created these things. It sounds a tad racist, and I apologize if it comes across that way, but by the time settlers came to this part of the Midwest, the native peoples had already been ravaged by disease. Their culture had been very much damaged by being pushed by other native groups westwards. And the early explorers and settlers who came in did not figure they had the skills to build these creations. Also, because these things had been built most recently, almost 1,500 years ago, or excuse me, 500 years ago, before the settlers showed up, the native peoples did not have this as part of their immediate culture.
So there were all these theories. Effigy mounds were even featured on a March 8, 1845 edition of The Prophet, which was published by the early Mormon Church, and they thought that the mounds might have a significance to their own religion.
There were an amazing number of theories that came up. One of the classic ones was these were created by the Lost Tribes of Israel that had somehow found their way to what is now southern Wisconsin and created the mounds. This, again, mound builder myth continued on through most of the 1800s until it was finally debunked by a gentleman by the name of Cyrus Thomas, who worked for a federal agency, part of the Smithsonian Institution called the Bureau of American Ethnology. And his report basically put an end to this, though.
And one of the first people to document this was a 19th century scientist named Increase Lapham.
Lapham. Yep. Yeah, Increase Lapham is just this fascinating character,
and you actually portray him.
I've been known to dress up as Increase Lapham, and will be doing so again at the Milwaukee Public Library on the 15th of September, on the date that he is inducted into the Wisconsin Writers Hall of Fame or Authors Hall of Fame.
Well, you brought with you a very heavy old book called The Antiquities of Wisconsin, which we will take a look at here.
That's it. Lapham actually shows up in Wisconsin in 1836, and within just a few months of getting here, he begins to encounter these effigy mounds that are in the shape of various animals. He had come from Ohio, where there were other ancient earthworks made by the native peoples, but what we have here is these unique mounds that are in the shape of animals of various kinds. And by the end of 1836, he writes what is probably one of the first written pieces, published pieces about Effigy Mounds in the local newspaper, the Milwaukee Advertisers, talking about what he called a turtle-shaped mound that was at Prairie Village, what we now know as Waukesha, and arguing for its preservation.
It must have been frustrating for him. In his final published report, he included 61 engravings and 55 lithographed prints of mounds, and he then writes, quote, "Many of them were destroyed immediately or within a few days of my survey."
Yep. And there were mounds that we only know where they were or what shape they were because of his work.
And we have records of them. We know they existed, and we know they exist no more.
Yep, and where they were. It's interesting. We often talk about these mounds being destroyed. I prefer use the phrase effaced, like erased, because we still know where they were. And in some cases, there are still remnants of those mounds that can be found as traces in the soil.
Well, on the webpage for Man Mound Park, where you work as a caretaker, it says that over 900 mounds existed in Sauk County alone, and over 75% of them have been destroyed.
Yep. That number may be a little mistaken. One of the things that we should deal with here quickly, and that is, there are lots of kinds of earthworks made by the native peoples.
And they aren't all effigy mounds?
Exactly. Much more common are what we call conical mounds and linear mounds. Conical is probably not the best term. Think of them as round mounds or dome-shaped mounds. And then linear mounds sometimes are described as being like a cigar on the landscape. Actually, there's a linear not far from the Man Mound that is 185 feet long, about 5 feet wide, and about 2 feet out of the ground. Again, these are burial mounds, but both conicals and some linears were made much before effigy mounds were ever made, and perhaps afterwards as well. So the effigies are these unique ones. There were, by the best information I've been able to find, about 225 effigies in Sauk County alone. Perhaps 50 or 60 of those still exist.
Now, the site also quotes an early Honey Creek farmer, and I'm just going to read it here. He says, "We were rather irked by the large number of Indian mounds we had to plow down. There must have been at least 25 on our land. Some were shaped like animals and some like birds. All were from 3 to 5 feet high. I suppose we should not have destroyed them, but they were then regarded merely as obstacles to cultivation, and everybody plowed them down."
And that kind of commentary is so frustrating, because I wish I could have seen those mounds, and I wish Increase Lapham had been able to record those mounds as he went through the landscape. But sadly, that was the approach. These things were obstacles. Sometimes mounds were considered really good sources of fill soil.
They were burial mounds primarily?
All mounds are generally considered to be burial mounds. Effigies are somewhat unique because they were considered to be somewhat more important.
They serve a religious purpose, I imagine.
Yeah, religious is a slippery slope word, but yeah, they are part of the belief system of the native peoples. And so often what we find in effigy mounds is just one or two burials, where conicals and linears often have multiple burials. So they perhaps could be thought of as the burial spot for the masses, as opposed to the more important, the leaders.
Now, in Egypt, we're used to some tombs being very elaborate. King Tut's tomb, for instance. Mm-hmm. These people were pretty egalitarian, right? There wasn't a lot of stratification in their society.
As far as we can tell, not. But again, we're going back a long way, and you know, to determine what their culture was like is a bit of a challenge from this distance and with very few remains in terms of material goods.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Rob Noury. He's a landscape historian, preservation of sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society. We're talking about effigy mounds. There are many of them in southern Wisconsin, some of them right under your nose. Have you ever been to an effigy mound? Is there some particular site in southern Wisconsin that you love to go to that you want to share with our listeners? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or put a comment on the Joy Cardine Facebook page, and I'll read it on the air. Or you can access us via Twitter. So let's go to some of these other mound sites. Why don't we pick up on Lizard Mound County Park? What do you know about that?
Lizard Mound is a fascinating spot. It's, in fact, probably the site where the first mound was ever measured in Wisconsin.
And where is that located?
It's just north of West Bend, and it's now a Washington County Park. It was actually a state park for many years, but the state decided to unload it to the county at one point in about 1980. It is probably one of the highest concentrations of mounds in a small area. So if you're looking for a place to go to get a good introduction to effigy mounds, it really is a wonderful spot. There's been a great deal of work there recently. It was a very wooded spot, and recently a lot of those woods have been cleared to give a better sense of what the landscape would have looked like at the time these mounds were built. They most likely were not actually made in the deep woods, just because you needed the space to build these things.
Well, I imagine there's a lizard mound there?
There is. Lizard mounds is a term that has long been used. As we're trying to better understand how these fit into the native people's belief systems and mythology, it's probably what we would refer to as a water spirit rather than a lizard. And other mounds that are similar to these are known as panther mounds. Panther mounds are really just lizard mounds on their sides, we think.
Let's pick up on another one. Nitschke Mounds Park. Am I pronouncing that right?
You are. It's a fascinating spot.
Where is it?
It is near, I'm blanking on the location. It's near Beaver Dam. It's east of Beaver Dam I've got my notes here, near Horicon. It's a Dodge County park, and it is an incredibly dense concentration of mounds. Part of what makes it fascinating is the mounds actually overlap, and it's one of the challenges of managing that site for the county parks is actually putting trails so the trails don't go over the mounds themselves. But it's a fascinating site. It was almost entirely excavated in, I believe, the 1920s and 1930s by the Milwaukee Public Museum. And again, as with just about every excavation of mounds, very little is found in terms of material objects.
And it's near Horicon, which is a great bird watching site. Are there bird mounds?
I believe there are bird mounds at that site, yes. And there are many bird mounds that are found throughout the state of various kinds.
1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And why don't we go to Robert in Portage. Robert, you're on with Rob Noory.
Okay. Hello, Rob and everybody. I have a question about the Muscadet area. And there were some effigy mounds in that area when I was growing up in high school. And I'm wondering where those mounds are and who owns them. I mean, who owns the land there?
There are a number of effigy mound groups around Muscadet. One is quite spectacular. Well, many of them are quite spectacular. One of them in particular is owned by the Department of Natural Resources, and it is what's known as the Twin Lizard or the Bloyer Mound Group, which is about, say, 3 miles east of Orion on the north side of the Wisconsin River. And if you get on the Wisconsin DNR's website for the Lower Wisconsin River, I believe that will have information. If not, get a hold of the folks at the Lower Wisconsin Riverway Board office. They certainly know where that site is. There is another very interesting site. While the Bloyer or Twin Lizard group is down low, it's right by the edge of the river. There's also a privately owned site that is up high on a hill. It's called Frank's Hill. It was named for Frank Shadowald, who was the owner of that site for a long time and took very good care of it. And there are some spectacular mounds up on his property.
Robert, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Jim in Irma. Jim, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Rob Noory.
Yeah, good morning and great show. A lot of the mounds, and the effigy mounds, of course, are mostly located, I think, in southern Wisconsin. I live up in Lincoln County, and we've got a series of mounds I'm sure he's aware of. The work was done by Robert Salzer in the 60s. I think they're conical mounds in southern Oneida County, up around what's now called Lake Nokomis, which is one of the reservoirs they built in the 20s. It was actually called the Rice Reservoir, and it was named the Rice Reservoir because of all the wild rice that was there before they flooded it. And I don't know if you're familiar with those mounds. They're conical, and they're usually in lines And there's quite a few of them up here. Some of the sites have been disturbed and destroyed through farming or through development of the lake. I think a lot of them are probably under the lake. But I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Salzer's work up here.
I am. And again, these are the conical mounds, which are found in a larger geographic area. Actually, conical mounds are found pretty much throughout the eastern United States. But they also are spectacular. There's no doubt about it. There is also a spectacular group of mounds up in Rice Lake area that are, again, all conical mounds and not the effigies. There are a few effigy mounds that are found somewhat further north, but largely they are south of a line that goes from Green Bay over to Hudson, that being kind of the northern extent of effigy mounds in the state.
Who owns effigy mounds in general? And if you own a site with a mound on it and you're a private landowner, can you do whatever you want with it still?
There is a thing that's known as the Burial Sites Preservation Act, and that came into existence 30 years ago, specifically to protect burial sites in general, but effigy mounds were certainly part of that, and burial mounds. If you are a private landowner and you have a mound on your property, it is your property, though there are protections for that, as there are burial sites if you happen to own a farm and there's an old farm graveyard on that. So there are protections under the Burial Sites Preservation Act. Many of the mounds in the state, actually the largest landowner of mounds, especially effigy mounds, is the Department of Natural Resources. And many of the state parks have effigy mounds in them, everywhere from High Cliff State Park through Devil's Lake, near where I live, through the Lower Wisconsin Riverway. Wyalusing State Park has some spectacular mounds along the Mississippi River.
Let's squeeze in another call before the news break. Let's go to Joseph in La Crosse. Joseph, you're on with Rob Noori.
Hi. Hey, we have a couple of circular mounds here in La Crosse at the Myrick Park Zoo, but they destroyed the zoo and they pretty much, there's nothing left now down here. There's like maybe one left out of like seven that were here in town. And as a kid, they took us out to the effigy mounds and, you know, it was so cool to see that. And for them to take that away from us as kids, you know, that's kind of rough, and I don't understand why, and I was wondering if you knew any clue why.
I don't have any details on that particular site. If you're looking for more, I would suggest that you contact the Mississippi Valley Archaeological Center, which is at UW-La Crosse, and I'm sure they can tell you more about the details of that particular site.
Joseph, thanks so much for the phone call. And we've got an email from Bernard. He asks, has there ever been any DNA analysis done of mound contents? And if so, what do they tell us? Artifacts, anything else?
To my knowledge, there has not been any DNA analysis done of human remains that have been found in mounds. At this point, excavating effigy mounds or any mounds really is inappropriate both legally and culturally. So that kind of analysis, to my knowledge, has never been done.
And we should emphasize that if you're visiting any site that contains effigy mounds, these are not only historic and cultural sites, they're sacred sites to some people, and they shouldn't be disturbed.
Absolutely. One of the most important parts of this is to treat these mounds with respect. One of the reasons the way we manage the man mound by letting the grass grow somewhat long on the mound is to both not run machinery over them all the time, but also to subtly discourage people from walking on the mound.
Rob Noori, he's a landscape historian, preservation of sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, volunteer caretaker of Man Mound Park near Baraboo. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine this morning. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll find out about some other effigy mound sites around Wisconsin. We also want to hear from you about your favorite effigy mound site, about thoughts you may have had on the many sites that have been lost before they could be preserved, and your questions for Rob Noori. 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org or put a comment on the Joy Cardine Facebook page and I'll read it on the air. But first, this news.
Lloyd, La Crosse, Mountain,
Auburndale, New Auburn, Berlin, New Berlin, London, New London, Rome, the other Rome, Franklin, the other Franklin, New Franklin, Richmond.
I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine, and today on Tell Glenn Where to Go, our guest is Rob Noory, landscape historian, preservation of sites chairperson for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, talking about southern Wisconsin effigy mounds. Let's pick up on some of these other mounds in the few minutes that we have left, Rob. Kingsley Bend.
Kingsley Bend is a fascinating spot. It's near the Wisconsin Dells on Highway 16 between near the Dells towards Portage. And one of the things that makes it just fascinating and wonderful is it is owned by the Ho-Chunk Nation. It was actually a wayside, DOT wayside. When it went out of business as such, it became the ownership of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And they've done a marvelous job of working with that site to highlight the mounds. There are specifically two bear mounds on that site that are on a hillside on a bit of a rise that are just absolutely gorgeous. And it is right at the Kingsley's Bend of the Wisconsin River. Also within that area, though, to get to them, you have to go through the Wisconsin Dells, so it's a long drive from one to another, are a series of other mounds that are right in that area just below the actual Wisconsin Dells. And obviously, it was a very important place to the native peoples, but Kingsley's Bend is one of the best places to go visit mounds.
Whitewater Effigy Mound Preserve.
Is on the west side of Whitewater and is a city park, and they've done a interesting job there because it is in an area that is a oak opening, open oak woodlands. It probably is one of the best spots in the state to give a sense of what we think the landscape that surrounded Effigy Mounds was. And they're doing a marvelous job of managing that site.
And we mentioned that southern Wisconsin is sort of the epicenter of the mound culture, but there is a site right across the Mississippi River in Iowa.
Yes, it's a little odd. Effigy Mounds National Monument was created, I believe, in 1949. And it is a wonderful site. But it is in Iowa. It's on the very, very western fringe of the Effigy Mound area. And in order to get to the mounds, you need to take a fairly serious hike up the hill. These are on the tops of the bluffs along the Mississippi River. But they are spectacular. There are also some mounds just south of there in what's known as Pikes Peak State Park in Iowa. And it's a great place to go learn about the mounds.
Plus, when you come back, you can tell your friends that you've been to Pikes Peak.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the ones right in our own backyard if you live in Madison.
Here in Madison, there were a very large number of mounds, and still are. And they're found in a lot of the Madison City parks. They're in Vilas Park, in the Vilas Park Oval. There's a spectacular bear mound. The University of Wisconsin has a number of mounds, both on campus, on Observatory Hill. There are two fascinating mounds. One's a bird, and one's a double tail water spirit mound.
You've got some right on the Mendota State Hospital grounds.
There are. There are ones that can be visited, though it's best to check in and make sure that you're not going to be disturbing things that are going on. So best to check in with the administration there before you visit that site.
And we're talking about burial mounds, but there's burial mounds in a place that's currently being used for burials, Forest Hill Cemetery.
It's fascinating. There are several cemeteries throughout the state which have these effigy mounds in them. And whether that's just pure coincidence, I don't know, but it's fascinating that those two come together. Another mound here in the Madison area that I actually spent the day at yesterday is a thing called the Heim Mound. It's in Middleton, right off University Avenue, and it's the only mound that we as the Wisconsin Archaeological Society own. And the reason I spent my day there yesterday was that it was the 100th anniversary to the day of when that mound was first measured by an early Wisconsin archaeologist by the name of Charles E. Brown. Sure enough, Charlie Brown. And it's a mound that's in the shape of a fox. And I spent the day doing some clearing of underbrush there yesterday.
And other sites around Madison, Cherokee Park, Vilas Circle Park, Edgewater College, Picnic Point, and the Arboretum.
The Arboretum has some fascinating mound groups and well worth visiting and good trails to get to see them.
Let's go to one more phone call. Let's go to Tammy in Menominee. Tammy, you're on with Rob Noori.
Hi, thanks for having me on. This is a very interesting subject. I really appreciate you talking about it. I do have a question. Not far from where we live, we have friends that have land, you know, that's been in the family for years. And our friend, which we're in our 50s, remembers going up to a place. It looks like there's a big lizard mound, a big lizard head, and it wraps around in a half circle and a tail on the other side with the legs. And where the heart of the lizard would be, it almost looks like there is like a best way to describe it, like an amphitheater. There's like stones in a half circle, and then at the bottom, you know, because it's on the hillside, at the bottom of where these stones, where it looks, we called it always the Indian church.
Got it, Tammy. Let's let Rob respond here.
We believe that these mounds were not just made and left, but were visited for ceremonial purposes afterwards. And many mounds we find, and the Man Mound being one of them, there's a depression at the heart location, and we believe that this was a ceremonial spot, and the fact that there would be stones in that may well be part of that ceremonial use of that mound after it was built.
And Rita emails to us, I spend a lot of time in the woods and often come across odd-shaped or unnatural-looking mounds, rises, etc. in the landscape. Without disturbing the ground, is there any way to determine what I am looking at is an effigy or Indian mound rather than a natural part of the landscape?
Ooh, that's a big challenge, because the effigy mounds are very subtle on the landscape, and it really is a matter of very carefully mapping out that rise and seeing what it was. In the case of the Man Mound, I don't think William Canfield, who first measured it in 1859, really knew what it was until he had mapped out all his measurements of that mound. So what I would encourage you to do is look very carefully at the site and map it out to the best of your ability and see if it may be a mound or a remnant of a mound. There are lots of natural mounds out there in the woods. When you think about a tree falling over, leaving what we know as a tip-up mound, a lot of those can be confused with small either effigy mounds or conical mounds.
And very quickly, I want to mention that for those of you who want to stay indoors, there's a Horde Museum exhibit and Indian Mounds Park, which is located near the Jefferson County's Indian Mounds Park. Got one more question for you, Rob Noori. Why do effigy mounds remain so mysterious, and do you think it's important to solve the mysteries?
Well, it's interesting because the title of the exhibit at the Horde Museum is The Mysteries of the Mounds, and it's a great exhibit. I very much encourage people to go there. I must admit I am a little uncomfortable with the phrase mystery of the mounds because it suggests a need to solve that mystery, and I like the fascination. I like every time I visit a mound to be fascinated by what's there.
Thanks to Rob Noori, our guest today, and thanks also to show producer Marika Suval and our on-air producer Elizabeth Deliquez, our director Christy Taylor. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine. It's time for Wisconsin Life. Rivers are often called the lifelines of an area. For Chris Cerugi, the Fox River became more than just an economic engine, but a place to see the human and natural history of her area unfold.
As a child, I was taught that a river was the lifeline of an area. It fed its residents, allowed travel and trade, and provided recreation. This was the book learning. But as I grew up, I heard, saw, and felt the stories of a river. The Fox River begins in Columbia County and meanders north to the Bay of Green Bay. It has separated towns, creating rivalries. Think East and West Apeer. One town, two school districts separated by a current of water. The Fox has been ridden on, dived into, floated upon, argued over, and dumped into. The river hums stories of change from year to year. From childhood to young adulthood, I saw the seagulls and ducks solidly standing on the rock precipices below the dam. Then, in the 1990s, I saw a strange black bird with an orange throat pouch and a sleek, long, curved neck. The cormorants had returned to our area as the river flowed cleaner, the fish multiplying. The birds welcomed me to their story as I drove across the bridge, skimming the water so low, so graceful. Those black birds spoke of cleaner water, of progress from Rachel Carson's warning in Silent Spring, and from the PCBs from paper mills that maimed, killed, and silenced birds and reptiles. Still, the river, the wandering minstrel, created additional tales. Around 2000, another bird, white with black-tipped wings, a large beak pouch, prehistoric-looking, rode the updrafts above the river. On land, these awkward-looking birds stood casually on the rocks below the dam. My husband told me they were pelicans. I'd only seen them at the Milwaukee Zoo. They waddled along clumsily on the cement walkways, looking strange and absurd. But watching the pelicans ascend over the river, I'd stand mesmerized. They flew high overhead in a V formation along the Fox. Sometimes, through the summer months, I saw them soar miles inland, not searching for food, but feeling the warm summer wind, riding the currents, wheeling, gliding. I'd pull my car to the roadside, step out amongst the periwinkle chicory to watch them circle, white upon a deep blue, a slow-spinning, cirrus-feathered cloud. We may learn the facts from a book, but riding along or on a river gives us a chance to see and feel a story that feeds our desire for beauty and awe. It gives us a tale of what was, what is, and what may be possible if we only listen to its words.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find out more online at wisconsinlife.org.